Third case for argument this morning is United States against Afonia.
Good morning, Your Honor. Gregory Mitchell on behalf of Mr. Afonia. Your Honor, this case, again, I won't belabor the issue here, but I think that the main issue that Mr. Afonia raises is the degree into which the government can use the expert opinion in drug cases, in this case, Agent Coleman, to simply infer what is always considered relevant information concerning people who are at drug deals. In this particular case, Judge, his appeal is based on your Garcia decision, which pointed out that the admissibility of that type of expert testimony needs to be challenged with respect to how that particular opinion is rendered. And in this case, the question of whether or not Mr. Afonia was merely present or had some other role during the drug conspiracy was a critical issue of the case in this instance. And it appears that Agent Coleman did not have any sort of or provided any testimony to indicate that he had any experience relative to this type of drug transaction or this particular role of Mr. Afonia. Specifically, Judge, the record on appeal indicates and the trial indicated that Mr. Afonia was not even indicated or even identified as being a part of any sort of drug conspiracy involving any of their players until approximately not even a week before, the day of the actual delivery. And in this case, the facts were that there was a courier who came in from overseas, and he was immediately arrested as he tried to enter the United States. At that point, the transaction took a whole different turn in terms of the time of execution, the way that they transported from Washington, D.C. to Chicago, even in terms of the delivery here at the bus station. And what was asked of Mr. Coleman in terms of this mere presence was whether or not his experience involved this courier-to-courier transaction, supposedly, that this person, Mr. Afonia, was alleged to have been.
How did it alter Afonia's activity? The fact that he was arrested and was coming on the bus and everything, how did that alter Afonia's activity? You say that changed everything.
Well, Judge, the way it occurs is what Mr. Afonia was not, from the evidence, was not even intended to be the pickup person as it was identified back in Washington, D.C., and not even as the 2.5-hour delay occurred in Chicago. As the record was developed, the government was aware that now that Mr. Sanders was cooperating, that there were phone calls back and forth with the person that he was to deliver the heroin to. And in that instance, at that time, he was already late, and there was an arrangement for the person to pick up Mr. Sanders was a different person. In fact,
the bus was late. That was just because the bus was late, wasn't it?
Well, not only was the bus late, Judge, but in fact, the pickup person should have been was identified as a Jeep Cherokee. He was going to pick him up himself, and they found that individual there, or at least they suspected to have him. But then after the delay, he indicated that there would be another person, a taxi driver, my brother, and that was right on the tape as well. And a taxi, in fact, showed up there, but Mr. Sanders was instructed by the government not to enter the taxi, and so that transaction never occurred. It was then sometime later that after he stood out for an extended period of time, Mr. Afonia drove up and he picked up Mr. Sanders. The question becomes whether or not this person, given the suspicion that this drug deal had gone bad, terribly bad, was the person controlling it totally outside of the realm of possibility that he would have sent an innocent person to see if, in fact, the government had made his courier. And that's exactly what the position was in this case. Instead, with this testimony of Agent Coleman was that would never happen. It never would happen at all because a drug dealer, because it's a valuable amount of a drug commodity, he would never send anyone, even if he suspected that there may be. But when on cross-examination, as I pointed out in the record, under cross-examination, Agent Coleman specifically said that if, in fact, he had the suspicion that the deal was up or that he had been made, he would probably call off the deal. And in that regard, I asked Agent Coleman under cross-examination whether or not that changed his entire scenario. He says, well, I don't know. So now the question becomes, if this is a factual pattern concerning the transportation or the delivery of drugs in this particular case is a fact scenario that he had no experience in, then the question is, does he have the ability now to testify as an expert that in this case, given the time constraints, the way the drugs were delivered, not where there was a supplier and a sale, because every other cases that are cited to by the government in this case, Lowe, Garcia, and Cruz, had individuals who had multiple transactions, multiple involvement. They had been seen several times by authorities. They were involved in counter-surveillance. They had been at several meetings. They had gone to hotel rooms. They had actually run interference. This was a situation where Afanja showed up at the bus station, a public area, and looked for a person that he had never met. And when he was late, he drove around the bus station two or three times looking for him, and he was not there. 2 hours later, he came back, and that's when he picked him up. And so the question becomes is whether or not Agent Coleman's testimony, as to this is how drug deals occur, after he testified under oath that this is not the type of thing that he had experience with. He had no experience with humans being used as couriers. He had no experience with couriers serving as couriers. He had experience being the drug dealer himself, being the courier for drugs that have been delivered, or the person bringing the money. Street-level drug deals. This was not the scenario. So the question becomes, what kind of evidence or what kind of factual basis to establish his background to testify that this particular case and this individual was such that it was an innocent bystander or the only person who are present at drug deals are infants and children. In this case, the judge gave no such inquiry, and we would contest that that was error. The other problem is that once you get past the expert testimony, the question becomes, is that enough for conviction? And as that I filed at the district court level, the whole concern was what other role did Afanja have during the course of this? And the government made out that he had another role, that he provided surveillance or counter-surveillance, or he drove around. And the argument in that case is that that was something that had never been raised before. That was testimony from an agent had provided no report, had never, and in fact, a case agent had never intimated in any prior testimony that Afanja was ever suspected of providing counter-surveillance, surveillance with respect to the drug deal at the bus station. In fact, there was no indication that he had any conversations with anyone involving the drug deal. The only evidence that the government had was a description that came for the first time at trial that he sort of, when he went over to meet Mr. Sanders, he went directly for the suitcase. For the first time, despite all of the other agents who provided reports, for the first time at trial, the agent now said no, in his opinion, he wasn't there to meet Mr. Sanders to pick him up from the bus station, but he went directly for the suitcase, thereby inferring to the jury that he really wasn't there to pick up the individual. He was there instead to pick up the heroin because he knew what was in the suitcase.
Well, what about the recorded conversation?
The recorded conversation, Judge, as cited in the brief, was that there was a meeting when he first walked up, and Sanders, not Afanja, Sanders says, "Are you the ones?" And Afanja says, "Of course, we're here to pick you up." And he pointed to, in fact...
Well, that's one explanation of the conversation. Well, there's a little more to it than that, well, including an incriminating explanation about the thing and not wanting the thing to be given to the wrong person, etc.
Well, absolutely. And the concern here is that whether or not the government had met his burden beyond a reasonable doubt, and the question becomes, does he know the mental intent of Mr. Afanja, does he know what's actually in the suitcase?
What language were they speaking when they first encountered?
Yoruba.
Yeah.
And they had a Yoruba interpreter.
Not too many people on the bus speak that language.
Excuse me?
Not many people speak that language on the bus. Obviously, this was not some inadvertent encounter that you had to figure out who you're talking to.
Well, Your Honor, there was no indication that the person that he talked to on the bus was in any way Mr. Afanja. That was never an allegation. The person that Mr. Sanders spoke to en route was this other person in the Jeep Cherokee. So there was no connection.
I'm talking about the encounter with the suitcase.
Yes, Judge, and that was the very first time that Mr. Afanja, defending his case, met Mr. Sanders, and the interpretation that was made, because that was a tape-recorded conversation, too. He was wearing a wire. The interpreter said there was an introduction, "Are you Yoruba?" To identify who he was, and then Sanders asked, "Are you the ones? I want to make sure." And he said, "Yes, we are." The question becomes whether or not, when you provide that in addition to the expert testimony, is that enough for the jury to be allowed to infer that Mr. Afanja's was there, his mental intent was to get the heroin? And I think this court has already instructed that that is a dangerous precedent to set for an expert to start talking about the mental state of a participant if you have no other evidence than mere presence. And in every case cited, there was other evidence of his involvement, which was not in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Ms. Bonamici.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deborah Bonamici on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, with respect to the first and primary issue in this case, this court has previously proved on numerous occasions the admission of testimony from an expert witness, almost precisely like the evidence that was presented in this case. And the only real argument that's been made for making any distinction between this case and this court's prior precedent is the concept that this was not a hand-to-hand transaction and that these were not the kinds of experiences that Agent Coleman had had in the past. That's not precisely correct with respect to the record. The testimony that was presented with respect to Agent Coleman's qualifications were that he had 10 years of experience as a task force officer, had substantial training and experience or training in drug trafficking through the DEA as well as prior law enforcement experience. The defendant did not even object to Agent Coleman's qualifications and accepted that at trial that he was an expert in the field of drug trafficking and was competent to testify regarding the common practices of drug traffickers and the way that typical drug transactions occur. In this particular case, the agent explained that it is uncommon for people who are involved in drug trafficking to allow persons with no knowledge or involvement in the transaction to be present during the transaction. Pardon me?
How did he know that?
Based on what he testified to was that he had been involved in numerous prior transactions and also through his training had learned.
No, how did he know that?
How did he know? Based on his prior experiences,
no.
He had found that no
how
one.
How did he know asks how his experience led him to that conclusion? See, one possibility is he's just convinced that everybody at a drug transaction is guilty. He's always assumed that in the past, and he's assuming it now. One acquires knowledge by experimentation and testing. That is, you could, in principle, round up everybody at a drug deal and investigate them all to see who's guilty and who's not. But the proposition, I've always assumed they're guilty in the past, so I know they're guilty, is not a means of knowledge.
Right, and
I
would agree.
It's a form of reified ignorance.
I agree with that, Your Honor. And what I'm saying is that in his experience, he was able to observe transactions that occurred and to look around and see who's there and who's not. As Your Honor knows from the...
So the proposition is he reads guilt on people's faces?
No, the proposition is that normally...
You have described a form of getting knowledge. You could, I think, arrest everybody, find out whether they got drugs on them, find out whether they have paper which would tie them to the deal, and then you'd compile data about how many do and how many don't and see if you could identify the characteristics that associate one with the deal and so on. Now, it may be the reason the record doesn't have anything like that is because no one asked.
Well, that's accurate. As I said before, the defense did not object to the qualifications of...
This is not a question of qualifications. A lot of people who are qualified to give an expert opinion nonetheless give an opinion that is not supported by reliable data.
Well,
that's the problem, right?
Let me just... respond
somebody,
to that particular thing, I agree with that.
Look, if a biochemist gets on the stand in a case involving a tort case and says, I know that drug X is dangerous, there won't be any doubt about his qualifications, but there may be doubt about whether he's done the study needed to reach that conclusion. That's the question I'm asking here. Is this man smart or does he know something about law enforcement? What has he done to support his conclusion?
And I agree with that, Your Honor. And I think that, I mean, the qualifications here, the observations and experience here are not, I think there's a distinction between experiential expertise and scientific expertise. And the courts have focused on that and acknowledged that. And in the case of experiential expertise, there is a question of the expert's ability to observe over time. Now, you say, Your Honor, you suggest one possibility that you round up everybody present. You know, that is a reasonable possibility, and in fact, a lot of drug deals are conducted in clandestine manner so that there aren't other people present, and that's one of the ways that an expert of this kind can know that typically drug deals are committed only by the people who are involved in the case, or put more accurately, that drug dealers and drug traffickers don't normally allow innocent people to be present. Another manner in
which... You're just reasserting the conclusion. You aren't providing a means by which knowledge is gained to determine whether the conclusion is true.
One means is to observe that a number of drug transactions are conducted in secret only by the people who are directly involved. Another means of... You know, I recognize that that may not seem logical to you, but it is actually the fact. Another way that the experience may be gained is to observe cases just like the one that occurred in this particular case. The person who goes to pick up the courier is a person who shows up at the location an hour and a half beforehand and circles around the location where the pickup is to be made. And conducts counter-surveillance or acts in a way that's consistent with counter-surveillance and then shows up again later and immediately goes and picks up the suitcase and engages in a conversation with the courier that indicates that he's there to pick up the suitcase, that he has an interest in picking up the suitcase. That's an involved person. And when an agent has an opportunity to observe and even participate in some cases as an undercover agent, multiple transactions, he has the opportunity to observe that the people who are present and taking part in a transaction have a role to play in that transaction. They are involved people, and that typically they don't bring with them innocent bystanders to watch and observe everything that goes on.
What was the value of this product?
It was 3.6 kilograms of heroin, Your Honor, which the agent testified was valued at between $40,000 to $120,000 per kilogram at the time that the transaction occurred.
Wasn't there some testimony that the higher the value, the fewer people are involved and they're more protective?
Yes, Your Honor. The agent testified that the motivation that leads drug dealers or drug traffickers to avoid bringing innocent people to transactions is just that, to protect their valuable commodity as well as to protect themselves from detection by law enforcement. The evidence that was presented in this case was definitely within the scope of the testimony that's been permitted by this court repeatedly, and it was appropriate in this case. And with respect to the defendant's second argument regarding sufficiency of the evidence, you know, aside from the fact that the burden is great and Your Honors are well aware of all that, the evidence in this case was very strong. As Judge Sykes pointed out, the recorded conversation was highly incriminating, and the jury was entitled to view the evidence in that manner and to reject the innocent explanation offered by the defense. And for all these reasons, Your Honor, we would ask that the court affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence in this case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Mitchell? It's going to be brief. I think you've got about 20 seconds.
I would just point to page 27 of the brief, Your Honors, to point out that this is not a case where this was the typical drug deal that Agent Coleman testified to. And in fact, on cross-examination, when these specific facts were put to him, he admitted that he had absolutely no experience with respect to importing drugs, having a courier come, having it delayed in this regard. And so the question whether or not he simply can provide an opinion concerning the typical drug deal in this particular case is really the essence. In regards to the question of whether
thank
or not...
Thank you very much, Mr. Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell, we want to thank you for your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to both your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement.